He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Friday. It is the 10-10-25 edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst and CFP, certified financial planner. We're off to a pretty good start here on this Friday. The Dow up 111 points right now. That puts it at 46,470. We have the NASDAQ up 47 points. We have cleared that 23,000 elevation. We're now at 23,072 feet on the NASDAQ, while the S&P 500, I believe, is hitting a new high today. It's up 12 points to 6,746. Small caps up 0.5% right now. The bond market is behaving well. A little rally going on there, driving interest rates down to 4.10. So we're down 4 basis points from yesterday. And gold had a one-day sell-off. It's snapping back some today. It's up 60 basis points. It was above 4,000 again this morning. Now it's dropped below it a little bit. It's at $3,996 per ounce. Bitcoin is down $147 to $121,991. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management and nationwide fee-based only money management and financial planning firm. And I'm here with Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst and CFP. And we had a little bit of a downdraft in the market yesterday. Market, you know, look, the earnings season starts here this coming week. So I think maybe the market's in a pause mode. The market would also like to see the government shutdown come to an end. So our boys over in the military serving our country get their paychecks. The funny thing that I saw today, Barry, was they're going to bring back some people that work for the Bureau of Labor Statistics so they can get the CPI numbers next week.
Oh, well, that's good. Yeah, we'll get some, maybe get some weekly jobless claims at the same time.
But it's kind of interesting that the CPI seems to be more important than our military right now. Yeah. Oh, we got to get those numbers. We can't live without the CPI numbers. The Army, the Navy, the Marines, the Air Force, what the heck? They can go without a paycheck, but I hope we can get that thing resolved here sooner rather than later. Hopefully, I would like to see it done today so those paychecks go out next week.
Yeah, I was talking to a guy yesterday who was a veteran of the Vietnam War, and he was he's got over 500 jumps, I think, to his name, and also crashed a couple of Huey helicopters along the way. But he had some interesting thoughts about if they should get paid or not. Just put it that way.
I don't have any jumps to my name, but several downdrafts in the market in my 25 years, and only two crashes: the crash of 2000 and the crash of 2008-09, and when will the next one be? 2026, 2027? I don't know. We take it a day at a time, and we keep our eyes open, and we stay alert, and we stay informed. Well, they're narrowing down the list for the replacement for Jerome Powell, and I see that Jerome Powell's not on the list at all. He's not coming back. Bessent has pared down the list of candidates for Federal Reserve Chair to 5 from 11. I don't see my name on the list either. Two current Fed governors, Vice Chair Michelle Bowman and Christopher Waller, are on the shorter list, along with Kevin Hassett, Fed Governor Kevin Warsh, And BlackRock Chief Investment Officer Rick Reeder. Now, I wouldn't mind seeing somebody from our industry in that position. But anyways, we've pared that down from 11 down to 5. And, you know, that's got to make Jerome Powell even grumpier than ever. We'll see what he does at the next Fed meeting. European defense stocks, which led the market, have led the market this year. They've done very well. We've become familiar with a lot of names like Leonardo and Rheinmetall and BAE Systems and Kongsberg and Leonardo or Henstolt, etc. They sold off because of the de-escalation in the Middle East, but to me the real issue is Russia and Putin and them upping their budgets big time from 2% to 5% so that they can protect themselves from the menace in Moscow. But I still think those stocks are a little bit frothy here, but they are falling. They have been one that has been one of the leading sectors in the world this year. Who would have ever guessed it? European defense stocks, names most of us have never heard of. Most of them trade on the pink sheets, but they do trade. I mean, you can buy and sell them in your Robinhood account. I see we do a little bailout for Argentina. Now, I think if there was a communist leader in Argentina or a left-leaning leader, I don't think we would have bailed them out. But since it's a friend of the Trump administration, Elvis Presley Jr. down there running the Argentinian chainsaw with the chainsaw, the U.S. Treasury's finalized a $20 billion currency swap, meaning we bought $20 billion worth of Argentina pesos.
Yeah.
Those things can expire worthless, Barry. They have done that in the past.
I mean, talk about one country that's had a bunch of monetary issues over the years. It's certainly certainly Argentina's the poster child for that over the years. But
well,
maybe we can help pull them out.
Well, Bessent defends the move, saying they've got strong economic fundamentals, including structural changes that are underway that'll generate significant dollar-denominated exports and foreign exchange reserves, Bessent posted on X.
And it's only $30 billion. I mean, what would,
what's
would we
billion?
Say the deficit's up to now? 30-plus trillion? Yeah,
I mean, NVIDIA goes up $30 billion in a day. In a few hours, it can go up $30 billion. In an appearance on Fox News, Bessent insisted that the actions were not a bailout. Well, they are taxpayer monies. He says there's no money being transferred. They're just buying some Argentina currency to prop it up, to keep it from crashing once again. Now, Schwartzman over at Blackstone, he's another guy I listen to, okay? He also is a very smarter than me, I can tell you that. And he says that the scale of spending on artificial intelligence data centers is so stunning that it's powering the U.S. economy. Now, there's a good side and there's a bad side to that. Yes, there's this sugar high and data centers are being built and all of the players downstream are being lifted. That's lifting all boats and the nuclear stocks have come into play because they need energy. But what happens when that slows down? If that's holding up the economy, what is there when that slows down? And what about the rest of the companies out there in the economy? What about the oil sector? What about the steel sector? What about the building sector? You know, what about healthcare? What about pharmaceuticals? AI is kind of like Atlas Shrugs, right? Holding up the whole world right now, the world economy. He says, though, that the AI cap expenditure boom will continue for some time, he said in a fireside chat at a conference hosted by the Federal Reserve. I guess that's in their palatial new quarters there in Washington, D.C., reflecting how the U.S. economy is a lot different from other places in the world, except maybe for China, he added. You know, Europe really has not participated in this. I mean, they're still chasing solar and wind and basically the same things that they've done in the past and haven't really gotten caught up in the AI boom. Elsewhere in the discussion, Schwartzman noted that office market remains one of the few areas of real estate still in tough shape. Yeah, you know what? I mean, I was there on Wall Street in the early 2000s when, you know, you could hardly walk on the streets at lunchtime.
Right.
And Grand Central Station was Grand Central Station. I mean, it was man, the buzz on Wall Street. And I would add the buzz over here on the in the West Coast, in the San Francisco Bay Area. I remember visiting the Financial Center many times in the early 2000s, and the line out the door at Starbucks or for a breakfast burrito or over at the German restaurant, the German Hofbräuhaus after the market closed, that was quite the buzz. It ain't like that anymore. Now we have lunch at home. We'll be right back. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Docs Now show. I guess if we get into Warbury, we can helmet up the Bureau of Labor Statistics and send them into war. Since they're the only ones getting a paycheck, you know, from the federal government. I just find that funny that the inflation numbers are more important. Boots on the ground, so-called, I guess.
And you know, when Jeff sent us the list of, you know, who gets paid and who, you know, who are considered what and under what kind of appropriations bill, like, to me, I mean, shouldn't of all the people to fall under something where they should get paid, right? I mean, shouldn't the military be at the top? I mean,
you would think so, but, you know, let's get something done there today. Now, rare earth back in the news once again. And I did find another rare earth stock. It somehow was not in my app, and I'll mention that here in a minute. But why is rare earth so important? China tightened their rare earth export rules yesterday. Of course, this is ahead of the meeting later this month in South Korea with between Xi and Trump. They're playing their card. That's kind of their ace in the hole, and ours seems to be the NVIDIA chips. Rare earth minerals are crucial for electric vehicles because they are essential components in the powerful and efficient magnets used within EV propulsion motors. What would we do without those magnets? The magnets typically composed of neodymium slash iron slash boron, and that's NDFEB, very old from the old chemistry charts, or samarium cobalt, which is SMCO. They're the key to maximizing motor performance because they provide high energy efficiency for compact size, strong torque, which are all attributes vital for modern EV drive train. So 60% of the world's mined minerals come from China, but 90% of the processing capacity comes from China. So here we go again.
Yeah,
you know, we've
issue,
got another rare earth shortage, and they're scrambling. Now, there's a rare earth ETF. There's two of them.
One just came out, you said, right?
REMX. REMX is by our friends at VanEck. You know, they must call me twice a week because I could see it on my phone, you know, ID of VanEck trying to get a hold of me to tell me about their latest fund. The other one is Global Lithium Battery and Tech ETF. I know, actually, I think she still does it, the portfolio manager for that out in San Diego. And that symbol is LIT, L-I-T. Originally, it was focused on lithium.
Right.
But now it's also focused on rare earths. You know, one of the stocks that I discovered that wasn't in my app, METC. Let's look up METC together, boys and girls. It's Ramaco, Ramaco Resources. Now, I've heard of Ramaco before. They're a coal mining company, actually, headquartered in Lexington, Kentucky. where some rare horse genes come from, right? Some of the right. best studs in the world and mares in the world are housed there in Lexington and usually produce some top runners every year. Ramaco develops metallurgical coal in West and Southwestern Virginia and Southwestern Pennsylvania, but they also, I've been saying this, and we own a coal stock that's up 140% since we bought it. That's BTU, which is Peabody Energy. They're finding rare earth in some of these coal mines. The canary in the coal mine, I guess, Ramaco symbol is METC. It's $3.2 billion in market cap all of a sudden. This thing was $6 in April, and now it's $48. It's up eightfold since April.
Yeah, and I mean, just look, here's kind of the fervor that you've been talking about in these parts of the market. If you just look at a chart and then have look at the volume at the bottom, where you know, basically no volume,
no.
not much volume at all. And
no,
look
coal
at the
mining
volume,
was kind of going out,
now.
Right? Yeah,
right.
Look at the volume.
It's crazy.
Coal mining was a dead industry until, you know, Trump came in January and said at least we're going to keep the coal going until we have, you know, this the bridge to nuclear. And they are not, you know, disabling the coal plants anymore like they were. Now, they've disabled many in Europe, especially in Germany, because of their push over there for climate change and that this and that. So, anyways, all of a sudden the coal stocks are waking up because all of a sudden they're, you know, vital once again, the coal part of it and the rare earth part of it now
they're
is
finding,
like,
yeah, like you
icing
said,
on the cake, big time yeah. icing on the cake.
Well, and you said they're finding, what, rare earth in the mines that
yeah,
they you know, used to
overlooked.
Coal, get coal from, right?
Now, okay. Now, my wife and I watched two nights. It took us two nights to watch it. We watched the interview with Tucker Carlson and this Flynn. I don't know his first name. David, maybe? Greg Flynn. On his thesis is that blockchain is 666 in chapter 13 in Revelations, okay? And he explains his thesis behind it. But in reality, he says there will come a time when you'll have to register on the blockchain or you won't be able to buy or sell, which is also in Revelations 13. At some point in time, unless you get the mark of the beast, and he's saying that that is blockchain is the mark of the beast. Now, along these lines, I see today this company called 8co, the symbol ORBS. This is all interesting stuff. It could be BS, I don't know. But ORBS stock is surging as the authentication technology company announced the launch of a new pilot program focused on advancing AI authentication for the enterprise. In other words, you have to get into it, and he says within a couple of years, or maybe sooner, you won't be able to buy on Amazon and other places unless you have signed up on the blockchain. And have, like, you know on Twitter how you have to have verified. You have to be verified.
Yeah, so I guess that's a new way to verify, I guess, your identity or who's on the other end of the computer. Huh?
Yeah, exactly, 100%. And they want it.
Conrad Flynn, by the way.
Conrad, yes, right? And he has a Substack called the Conrad Effect. His grandfather was Robert Conrad, the actor, who's kind of a ladies' man, if I remember right, associated with a lot of the babes of the day. And he was the Wild Wild West and other movies and whatnot. But that's a fascinating interview. And basically his thesis is the same people behind the satanic occult in rock and roll are now behind AI. Okay? And I also listened to an interview that you should listen to between Tucker Carlson and Sam Altman. Very interesting stuff. If nothing else, it's entertaining. We'll be right back. But I must be the wrong call. Hit us in a bad bleed. And I wonder what's good for.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show. Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show, where we're continuing to hit new highs in the market for now. And, of course, we've talked all week about the debate raging out there. Bubble, no bubble. If you listen to Jensen Huang, it's not a bubble. If you listen to the International Monetary Fund, it is a bubble. If you listen to Goldman Sachs, there may be some high valuations right now, but you can't compare this to 2000. I just look at numbers, okay, because I know everybody's got a little bit of a jaded, you know, they've got their own agenda to push. I just look at the valuations every weekend, which I'll be doing again this weekend. I just look at the simple common denominator. What's the P.E. ratio today of the NASDAQ or the S&P 500 versus the P.E. ratio back in the year 2000? And can you justify a higher P.E. ratio? You know, a P.E. ratio, Barry, when all is said and done, it's how many years it takes you to get back your investment, right? If you're trading at 20 times earnings and you buy that company, it's going to take you 20 years to make back what you paid for the company in earnings, right?
Right. Yeah.
So it's pretty simple. I mean, you're going to buy a laundromat downtown at 20 times earnings that you'll break even after 20 years. Now, yes, if you sprinkle in 10% growth and you're good at marketing or acquisitions or whatever, that's a whole nother thing. But still, the common denominator in the market to compare to 2025 with 2000. And I also go back and look at the sugar high year of 2021 because that's the last time we had extreme multiples. I think it's probably the most important numbers to look at and use this comparison is where we're trading at today versus where we were trading at back then. And you can justify it all you want or rationalize it away, which I saw in the year 2000. They rationalized it away until finally you couldn't rationalize as the market started to sink, and before it was over, the NASDAQ was down 79%. That was the dot-com bubble bursting. So anyways, we always have that. I'm glad to have had that experience, to have witnessed it, and to see the liars out there that tried to convince me that valuations don't matter anymore. Those guys are not in the business anymore. They're long gone. So valuations do matter. And I pay very, very heavy attention to valuations on a daily basis. Now, talk about a sign of the times. Number one, I told you I went to the No Nukes concert. I drove home from college back in the year 1977 to watch the No Nukes concert at the San Diego Sports Arena. And I also remember around that time that they were starving in Ethiopia and U2. There won't be snow in Christmas, you know, for Christmas in Africa. Feed the world. It was feed the world back then. Now listen to this. Bill Gates considers ways to expand access to Wegovy and Mounjaro in low-income countries. So now we have the opposite problem. We're not worried about starvation these days. We're worried about obesity. So I guess feeding the world worked. We fed them too much, and now the Gates Foundation, and I've thought about that. You know, I would like to start a little foundation and help people that can't lose weight because I've seen it happen with people, and I've seen the change that it's made to their life. That's kind of one of my things how I could help the world. But Bill Gates is taking it on in a very big way. to try to make weight loss drugs, not rice, not wheat, not soybeans. No, here's a little vial of Novo Nordisk Wegovy or Eli Lilly's Mounjaro to help you lose weight. Okay, signs of the times.
Well, they must have decent refrigeration too. I mean, you've got to you got to keep that stuff keep that stuff cold.
Well, you've got to ship it cold in a cold pack until they come up with the pill. Now, I've mentioned this before. Every day I get emails from some or another provider of private debt.
You sent a couple of them over yesterday.
Yes, yeah, so I just thought I would mention this one. Hi, Bill. I had a few minutes and was hoping to connect regarding our infrastructure debt offering, VCRDX. So I'm thinking it's a mutual fund with those symbols, okay? It's currently yielding over 10%. 10%. Now, you hear me talk about where the world is at in the bond market today. We're in the high fours for quality. You get up around 7 and you're looking at, you know, a steel company that's losing money. You get up around 10% and you're like really out there on a limb. Some uranium company hoping to strike it rich in Kazakhstan. I mean, you're really out there. But here's a fund that's yielding over 10%. Now, your antenna should go up. We would like to get in touch regarding the unique benefits and historically low default environment found in the space. So, in other words, they're proposing that private infrastructure debt has a historically low default environment. I don't want any defaults. I don't want any chance of a default myself. I want to buy a bond that I know is the company's going to be there, 7 years from now when the bond comes due. But what happens when the infrastructure starts to slow down? I don't know how long this paper is they're floating, Barry. Maybe I'll have you talk to them. It's a company out of Denver, which was known for the penny stocks. Salt Lake and Denver were the two cities that were known for penny stock scams. But I just want to tell you, this stuff is being gobbled up by registered investment advisory firms, especially the big ones. And not only that, I mean, I heard the CEO of Franklin in the Bay Area, Franklin Templeton Mutual Funds, saying that this is the hottest thing in the market right now is private debt. And he goes on to say, Bill, we don't want to waste your time. Let me know in coming weeks when connecting via Zoom or a conference call works for you. Have a great week. Now, this just is not one that I've got received. I get them almost on a daily basis. And I don't believe that this is going to end well. Barry, is there not enough public debt in the world to invest in that we need to go a step further in the risk ladder and invest in private debt?
Yeah, I mean, what we've got going on here is, number one, you know, banks, I mean, frankly, banks have kind of ceased to be banks as much in terms of the lending perspective as they used to be, right, as particularly after 08-09. You know, they've got to, you know, just think about a mortgage. You got to fit in a perfect little box and this and that, right, to get the, you know, debt nowadays. So it's been, you know, so you've got these other areas of formats of debt, whether it was, you know, the Apollos of the world that have kind of, you know, really built those lending kind of institutions. The problem is what they want is liquidity,
and so there is no liquidity.
Well, the way they're getting, yeah, there's no liquidity for them, but the way they're, you know, selling this stuff to us and to,
yes,
you know, and
they're making a market in it.
They're creating liquidity for themselves,
and
so that's the,
you know, it's you can get 5% out of it, right? That's what you're limited to. In other words, it's not liquid. Your money is tied up. Now, if you read the fine print here, it does say that this an investment in the fund, which isn't publicly traded. Otherwise, you could sell at any time. they give it these symbols like it's, oh, you can sell at any time, like a mutual fund. No, that's not true. An investment in the fund involves a high degree of risk and should be considered speculative. The fund intends to operate as a non-diversified fund under the Investment Company Act of 1940. But the biggest problem is liquidity is very limited. Basically, what they could do is pay you 10%. This is what Bernie Madoff did. Now, I'm not saying that this is one step above that, okay? I mean, he was paying 10% a year guaranteed, or was it 1% a month? I think it was 1% a month. You were getting back your own money. It was a Ponzi scheme. I'm not saying this is a Ponzi scheme, but I would never, ever invest in private debt. Okay, and I put this in the same, why did we need to have private REITs? Because they create a product that everybody makes money off of, except the little guy. The investor who gets left holding the bag in the end after paying giant commissions, huge management fees, and has no liquidity at the end of the day. I was a victim of that in the late 70s, early 80s. I don't like it. It's not going to end well. We'll be right back. You got to go. And welcome back here to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now show. Let's just take a look inside the indexes and see what's driving the market here today. We'll take a look inside the S&P 500. You know, there's some bad sectors that are not participating at all. I see that oil is down another 1.7%. That's a sector that has just been horrible this year. Your big oil, I mean, I look at a few of them every day, like Chevron and BP, because they're proxies for the entire sector. And that just continues to be a very, very poor sector to be invested in here in the year. Nuclear has run circles, lapped it several times here during 2000. So being in the right places at the right time is very, very important. And avoiding the dogs and the sectors that aren't performing, and they do change. It's called sector rotation, and it does take place all the time in the market. And sometimes the sector rotation, it can set for quite some time and be in the same place. You know, I think AI and semiconductors and software, even though they got whacked back in March of this year, they've pretty much led the market. Precious metals have joined in and led the market here this year in 2025. When will the end come to this current cycle that we're in? Well, that's where I use the tool that I invented, the Best Stocks Now app, to show me every weekend, every Saturday morning when it's quiet and the market's closed, where the leading asset classes are. Okay, you talk about asset allocation. The common way of doing it on Wall Street is to base it on your age and asset allocate accordingly. 60-40, 70-30, with the 70, the high number, or the first number being your age and how much you should have exposure to bond funds, which have performed miserably over the years, very poorly. About 2% a year is what bond funds have averaged over the last decade. You can look it up. Okay, asset allocation, what are the asset classes that you have to choose from? Well, there's real estate, obviously, and there's plenty of real estate in the stock market. There's REITs, et cetera, REIT mortgages, housing companies. There's obviously U.S. Stocks. There's European stocks. There's Asian stocks. There's precious metals, which is a very important asset class. It's the leading asset class here in 2025. And then, of course, the massive debt market, the bond market, which has not done that well here in 2025. The returns overall on the bond funds, maybe they're the best they've been in a while, But you're still looking at 3 or 4% return, and that includes the coupons that you receive, the interest you receive on those bonds. Has not been a very good year for bonds. So if you're in one of the traditional asset allocations, you're 72 years old, and over at the wirehouse firm ABC, they got you in a 72% bond funds, you're lagging in the overall market very badly here in 2025, because there's been a very stark market difference between the return of bonds and the return of stocks this year. Now, when the market goes down 30% or 35%, you'll say, see, I'm glad I'm in the bond market. I only went down 2%, right? Well, you know what? That's why I believe in more of a tactical approach to asset allocation. And the first thing in my app that I rank on a daily basis, but I update it every week in the newsletter, is what are the leading asset classes? So I know how to be allocated right now. We have a heavy allocation this year to two asset classes, basically, and that's equities and precious metals. We do have our alternative investment for folks for safe money is just buying individual bonds in a bond fund, but not a bond fund. It doesn't trade like a bond fund. You hold those individual bonds to maturity. That's a whole different animal, and that's designed to give you the returns that you're signed up for to begin with.
When you purchase the bond.
Yeah, you know the coupon, you know the duration, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so then from the asset allocation, so obviously equities are way the best one to be allocated in. Second, precious metals are number one. Number two, but now you got to break down the market, number one, by countries. Europe's had a terrific year. China's had a terrific year, better than the U.S., but the U.S. has done okay. And then you break it down into sectors even further. Sector allocation, and the common way they do it on Wall Street, if you've got a 30% you're 70 years old and you should have 30% in stocks, well, they spread you out amongst all of the sectors out there. Well, we don't have any exposure to the lagging sectors, the railroads, the airlines, the transportations, the energy, the oil and gas stocks. The healthcare has been a horrible sector. Pharmaceuticals have not been very good, but they would have you in all of those sectors. We're more tactical when it comes to sectors, okay? I break the market down into about 70 sectors and then find the best stocks within those leading sectors and then watch for the rotation to come, which it eventually will, to move the allocations around a little bit. So it's much more active than passive. The other method I'm mentioning is a passive method. It's very easy to manage a passive method of investing. You tweak it once a quarter based on age and maybe a little bit of tactical, which they don't do much of anymore. But, you know, well, we just do things a little bit differently, and I think that separates us from the rest, and that's why we're not a big part of the rest out there. We're a little bit unique in what we do, and I guess we're kind of a dying breed, although I see kind of a move back to it, more of active investing here over the last few years. There's all of a sudden Vanguard has active ETFs and active funds
right.
Instead of
jumped on board.
Yes, they're finally jumping on board. So if you'd like to make an appointment with us at Gunderson Capital Management via Zoom or via email, GundersonCapital.com or 855-611-BESS. If you'd like to get the newsletter coming to you this weekend, 4 free weeks, and I send out my alerts during the day, and you get access to the powerful Best Stocks Now app that I invented for my own use and use every single day. I absolutely rely on that. And then that human touch that comes in to make those final decisions. GundersonCapital.com or 855-611-BEST. Have a great day. Have a great weekend, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.